Outside the box, trying to always assume the best. Today's topic is trust. On election day last November, while I was conducting a survey at the polls on the economy, another person was collecting signatures for a referendum and requiring certain proof of identity before a person could vote. While it sounds sensible, I was dismayed. What may seem like a simple request is not always so simple. Some people do not have an authorized form of identification. They may be older or unhoused, with no permanent address, or have lost or had stolen all their forms of identification. If they don't drive, a driver's license, a usual form of ID, is not an option. A passport is an option, but that costs money. A few don't want their photos taken. Recent immigrants, although they have become U.S. citizens, may not have acceptable forms of ID, like a birth certificate. In the past, a person just needed a piece of mail, like a utility bill, with their local address on it, to be able to vote in that town or city. But that could change if the referendum vote that was being circulated is passed in the November election. Then they must have a driver's license, passport, military ID, or a non-driver's ID card. Anyone whose address has recently changed will need to scramble to get something on short notice. While this ID requirement may be more an attempt at voter suppression, affecting mostly those who have fewer resources or whose lives are less stable, I think it is also an indicator of a deterioration in the public's trust in one's fellow humans, especially in the last generation or two. In the 1960s and 70s, I often used to hitchhike to get where I needed to go. But the few times I've tried it in the last 10 to 20 years, it has been slow going. I assume picking up or not picking up someone on the road is largely a matter of trust, that the person looking for a ride is trustworthy and not someone who will assault or rob the driver. When I lived in Monroe on a rural road about 25 miles outside Bangor, my partner and I never locked our house in the 23 years we lived there. When we finally moved out, we were lucky to find a key to our front door. We never assumed anyone out there would walk into our house and steal money or stuff, and no one ever did. Being in the city may be part of the change, since now we do lock our door when no one is home. In Monroe, we just told the town clerk where we lived and we were registered to vote. It was that simple. The show us an approved ID or you can't vote policy seems to contradict how people used to feel about others. In the past, it seemed we assumed a person could be trusted unless proven otherwise. Now, it's the reverse. Prove to me you are trustworthy, or else I will assume you are not. Maybe less person-to-person interactions and more online contacts contribute to distrust. The World Values Survey attempts to measure how much people, country by country, who do not know each other well, feel they can trust each other. One question from this survey is, quote, generally speaking, would you say that most people can be trusted or that you need to be very careful in dealing with people, end quote. Results vary. Wealthier countries seem more willing to trust people they did not know than lower-income nations. But those results should not be surprising. When people have more financial security, it's easier to trust others. The U.S., by the way, is somewhere in the middle when it comes to believing that most people can be trusted, well below Scandinavian countries, China, and Canada, but ahead of most Latin American and other nations in the global South. When I call someone on the phone that I only know by name, I give them my first name before asking for that person. That way, whoever answers at least knows I'm not trying to be dishonest. It's a way to build trust. How often do you experience random or unconditional acts of kindness and feel like you can trust others? I'm Larry Danziger, always wanting to have faith in other people.